Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick with you. And moving fast and furious, we say hello to former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington. Nate, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing today?
You know what? We're feeling good because this Titans team sitting there at 5-2, looking pretty good right now in a big division battle against the Colts coming up this week. But I want to start with the position that you played and Julio Jones specifically. We haven't gotten to see the full just Julio Jones and what he can do because he's been battling an injury, a hamstring, I guess. So from your point of view, how frustrating is it knowing what you're capable of, but you can't go full bore just because your body's not letting you right now?
Personally, as a playmaker, it is very frustrating. You know, especially – you know, being a guy that's always been the number one guy, the go-to guy, I'm pretty sure, you know, he understands that he can bring a lot more to the table. But I think he, you know, as you become older in the league, you kind of understand that it's all about the team. And right now, he's in a great position, you know, having the talent that he's had and having the, you know, priorities that he's had to carry a team in the most part and not have to do that here in the last couple games. It's something that he has to bask in because obviously once he does come around, his body does become to the point where he feels completely comfortable. It's going to be hell for a lot of defenses to deal with. You know, he's going to be a guy that they're going to be able to turn to on first down and not just rely as a backup contingency plan on third. So it's going to be something he can look forward to, and I'm pretty sure his understanding of his position and what's required of him right now in the offense is pretty much understandable.
I think that this is probably, you know, a media thing that we do. We get caught up in, okay, well, AJ's the one, Julio's the two, who's the three?
Right.
But really it's all about who's making a play. But as you look at how the receivers are, I mean, you know, 1 week Marcus Johnson is making an impact. The next it's Josh Reynolds. Then it's Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. In your mind, is that just how it should be? It's just it's by committee. Whoever is open and going to make a play, that's who's going to get the football thrown to him?
Well, to be honest, I think this Titans offense is very unique in itself, allowing the passing game to have a plethora of options in that regard. If you look at this offense, the only thing that you can consider number one is Derrick Henry. And with that being the base and the foundation of your offense, it allows guys like, you know, Marcus Johnson and, you know, the other unsung heroes, Pruitt's coming along and making a lot of good plays. It allows those guys to come along and make plays because AJ doesn't have to be the number one. The passing game doesn't have to be a reliable option for you because you're so reliant upon your run game. And once you have a running back like Derrick Henry that's now in the pass game, I mean, it's dangerous. It's dangerous for defenses to deal with. He's a valuable option even in the pass game, and he's been doing a tremendous job of showing his evolution of his game, of being an asset in the pass game and being effective. So I think it's all retrospective. I think each offense in the NFL kind of, you know, the scheme itself kind of alludes to the personnel that they have, and this Titan offense just gives them the ability to go out and spread it around at this point and take that number one tag away from the receiving core and allow everybody to be playmakers. It's definitely giving them an asset to their offense.
Nate Washington is with us, the former Titans wide receiver. Nate, there's a dynamic going on, I think, more than I've ever seen before. I'm curious to know your thoughts, and Mike Vrabel was just discussing it. The ball's thrown down the field, and we always know there's been a great battle going on between a defensive back and a wide receiver, but now it seems like there's a lot of intentional deep balls thrown short where the defender's sort of running back and the wide receiver's really good at sort of coming back to the ball, but while he's doing it, he draws the contact almost like a basketball where I'm trying to draw the charge, or if I have the ball, I'm trying to draw the foul. And you're getting these long pass interference calls against. What's that? Like, what are you seeing there?
Oh, definitely. It's the game within the game. You know, not only are there plays like that that are, you know, parallel with beating the game, but, you know, there's also, like, a lot of coaches use the coin toss. I know Coach Belichick, he's firm on deferring. So at that rate, he still wants the ball at the last 2 minutes of the first half so he can also get the ball back at the beginning of the second half. There's so many contingencies and schematics and schemes that coaches put into play when it comes to the game that a lot of people don't understand. And this is also the dynamic of having the experience of being around it and playing. But you're definitely right. You know, being able to now, if a broken play has happened or a quarterback has nowhere to go on a rollout or scramble play, a lot of these players are understanding now that the rules are what the rules are. And if there's a guy running blind and I can take advantage of that, no different from Aaron Rodgers taking advantage of 12-man rule. He is one of, probably not one of, but the best in the game at creating that now. You have guys now that are understanding punching the ball out is creating turnovers. So it's just the evolution of the game, in my opinion. But you're completely right. I think a lot of these guys and the quarterbacks and offensive coordinators and offensive schemes are understanding, you know, that deep ball with the guy now being playing with his eyes and not understanding that the ball behind him, you know, it creates an opportunity to advance your offense, even if it is through a penalty. And essentially, you know, this is something that the refs cannot deny. They have to call that flag. They have to give the defensive pass interference, and it puts you in a better position to go score points.
What's your assessment of the Colts right now as they try to climb back into this thing? They've won 3 out of 4. The only loss they had, they probably should have won the game in Baltimore on that Monday night. But we know this is a big one for them. They feel like if they get this one, they're right back in the race.
Definitely. They've been struggling a little bit here of late. But last game, they definitely put a lot of good things together. I think offensively they're finding their way. You know, they're also trying to establish the physical run game. And Jonathan Taylor has been doing an excellent job of establishing that. I think they also have a two-headed back with Nigel Hines able to come in and relieve him and do some great things. And their passing game is coming along. You know, Carson has actually been able to put some things together and make some plays with that receiving core. It's going to be important for them to get healthy. But other than that, I think they've been doing some things, great things advancing. And we all know that they've always had a great defense. So essentially, I think, you know, they struggled in the beginning trying to find themselves. Obviously, they're still young. They were going through the crisis with Carson and, you know, the injuries with the offensive line as well. And I think they're still dealing with some major injuries. But I think they're coming along and playing some good football. But one thing I'll say, you know, addressing that team and addressing, you know, where they are individually doesn't necessarily allude to, in my opinion, having to experience this rivalry. You know, it's always a situation with us and the Colts. You know, even the year that they went 0-16, they still competed well against us. And it's always been like that. You never can take a team lightly. As they say, it's any given Sunday. But this, you know, this inter-division rivalry, I think, is unique. I think a lot of people don't understand that there's a little rivalry there, especially, you know, as of late. You know, it's definitely been the Colts or the Titans at the end on top of the division. And I think they kind of understand that. So with that being said, I think it's going to be a battle. You know, it's going to be a battle. I think the Colts are going to come out and play their best ball, and the Titans are definitely going to have to be ready.
Nate, when you watch Ryan Tannehill and we talk about pass protection and keeping him upright, what are you seeing that he's doing to protect himself outside of just rolling out of the pocket and making a play with his legs?
Well, he's trusting his reads. Ryan gets the ball out of his hand well. You know, you look at a lot of guys of late, and obviously the playmaker at quarterback is becoming the ideal guy to have at your under your center. But there's very, you know, much success in a guy that's able to sit in the pocket and be able to read and get the ball out of his hands adequately and enough time to help his offensive line out and now put them in a bind as well, i.e. Tom Brady. You know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to run around. He's a guy that understands defenses, understands the progression of the reads, and gets the ball out of his hands. And I think that's what Ryan's doing. He's doing an excellent job of understanding, you know, defenses. He's also playing, in my opinion, exceptionally well off of the running game. He understands when he's able to take a shot. He understands what the middle of the field looks like off of his play actions, and he's getting the ball out quick. So it's helping him be on his feet, and at the very moment, you know, the pocket does present any type of pressure, he's not hesitant to go ahead and move forward and not run side to side, but get vertical and try to get downfield. So he's been doing a good job thus far. Obviously, you know, I got to be honest, I wasn't expecting this from him, you know, coming from Miami, but it's been steady progression each year, and you can see it. You know, you can see it watching film, you can see it watching the game, and he's becoming definitely that guy that you can win a Super Bowl with.
Nate, it's good to talk to you, my friend. It's going to be a fun one this weekend against the Colts, as it always is, but we'll do it again soon.
Okay, no doubt. I appreciate you guys having me, man, anytime.
Absolutely. Nate Washington, former Titans and Steelers wide receiver, joining us here on the show. You can tune in to the NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. The Game of the Week this Sunday is the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on the New Orleans Saints. Kickoff at 3:25 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When we come back, we'll talk some hockey with Chris Mason, Predators analyst. That's on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It's time!
Shot broken up in front, and what a slick backhand try right in front of Chris Mason. And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in, and the backhand stopped by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chichu right in front, and what a stop on Ekman by Mason.
And goal!
I hope you're ready, because it is time to talk to Mace. And we're going to talk to Mace here in a minute. He is over at the Mike Fisher Clay Shoot, so he is going to be testing his accuracy here very, very shortly. So
we
gotta,
have faith in him.
We got to get him out into the fields here very soon, so we're going to talk to him. But he is also going to recover in time to join Robbie Stanley for Smashville Live tonight from 6 to 7. You can always watch that on the 102.5 The Game Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter, of course, or listen to it over the airwaves. And tonight, the special guests will be Dante Fabro and Alex Carrier, the young defenseman. So let's start right there. Mace, good to talk to you. First of all, are you ready to go for the clay shooter? Do you feel like you've improved in the last couple years in this area?
Well, I do have to, you know, not toot my own horn, but we are defending champs, so I feel I have to defend my title. Our title. I'm shooting with Lee Company today, so I think I'm ready. I'm mentally, especially after hearing that intro. I have to thank the constable for that. Every time I just like while
got
I was
you,
playing,
man.
I was doing push-ups beside my truck, got back in, and yeah, I'm ready to go.
All right, all right. Yeah, now is it the same shooters? You said Lee Company. Is it the same crew as last year? So, the team is back intact.
Old Jerry Vance. Jerry Vance and the boys.
Oh, Jerry. Okay, yeah. He's an outdoorsman.
Yesterday, he texted me yesterday. He's like, Mace, get your head in it. We have a title to defend, so.
Okay. Well, maybe on Smashville Live tonight, you can reveal to the audience how you guys
Absolutely.
Well, you'll be talking to a couple of young defensemen, and this was a big thing, Mace, coming into the year. Without Ryan Ellis, everybody knew that there was going to have to be a continued – success, continued growth with Carrier, and then a reemergence from Dante Fabro. Phil Myers, the defenseman they got in the trade for Ellis, still has been a little bit slow to come around right now, fair to say. But Carrier, and especially Fabro, I think have really taken a nice jump.
Well, I think if you look at Carrier, this is, I can't wait to talk to him tonight, actually both these guys, because it's just great stories. You know, Willie, you and I have been hearing for years, talking to Scott Nickel and Jeff Kelty and everybody that, like, Carrier's ready to go. He's an NHL player. He just had so much success. He's a great leader, a good person. Obviously, we know, the Preds fans know now, how he plays the game. He's not a lot. He's good in the defensive zone. He's got offensive skills. He's just a good hockey player. And, you know, it's interesting to see over the past few years who they've given opportunities to, because maybe, you know, this guy's got a little more flash or pizzazz or whatever the case may be. But once he got that opportunity last night, he never looked back. You know, I remember the first time he got called up. It was one game, I think, and, you know, you look at a guy's opportunities, like, you know, he's playing 12 minutes, 13 minutes, not much of a chance to really see anything. But last season, you know, even the first couple of games for all those guys, it was, you know, it was like, yeah, they can play. And then the more he played, the more his confidence, you know, built, and the realization, the more games you play in the National Hockey League, hey, I can play here. And, you know, there was games going down the stretch where he had more minutes than Josi, more minutes than Ekholm. And in the offseason, you know, you're looking at this team, you're wondering, all right, can he do it again? Can he repeat? Was that a fluke? You know, and he's come out this year. He's been unbelievable. And for Fabro came onto the scene, played his first however many games out of college, did awesome in playoffs. He wasn't even supposed to be on the roster in playoffs, but he played so well, they had to put him in there. And then the last couple of years have kind of been, you know, a little bit of a roller coaster. You've seen, like, flashes of, like, what he can be. But as a defenseman, when you're a young player, it really takes time. And to play the game that Dante Fabro is expected to play, maybe a little bit out of character in terms of the physicality and the edge that John Hines wants him to play with, and the confidence, which is everything, you know, for a player. This year he looks like he's back. Like, he's taken the next step. And Willie, you've told me all the analytics on Fabs, and he's been one of the best guys. And I think him and Josi are one of the top pairs in the leagues in terms of all the Corsi and all those types of stats, especially Dante Fabro. So far it's still early in the season, but it's a great start for both of these guys.
Yeah, long way to go. And another thing, it's easy to take for granted. I don't think we do. But Roman Josi is playing tremendously well. And he's got over a point per game now. Two more assists last night. I thought, you know, in a game that was a lower chance game, Mace, he still was the guy sort of controlling and creating out there.
Yeah, and, you know, I look back to the discussion that you, Skillsy, and I had the other day about, you know, obviously we know Yossi's, you know, in my opinion, the best defenseman in the world, the best, you know, he's different than everybody else that plays that position. But the way that Fabro's playing allows him that space. You know, if Fabs just gives the puck to Josi every time and, you know, he doesn't play his game and doesn't take chances and doesn't join the rush, then it's easy. You go, all right, just shade over. We'll push it this way so they can't give it to Josi. But the way that Fabro's played has allowed Josi to excel and to, you know, be more impactful. He can obviously do it on his own at times, but I think the way that Fabs has played has allowed Jost more space out there. And, you know, if you give Roman Josi space, he's going to make you pay. And he's done that. And I think, you know, again, it's still early, but you like what you see so far. And he needs a partner. Carrier was fine with him, too. I think they found a good balance. You know, you change it up and try to find, all right, who's going to let Ekholm go? So you have Ekholm and Carrier. Both those guys can go, and they're both responsible defensively. But the way Fabro's playing right now, I think allots Roman some more space. And you can't just discard Fabro on that pair for sure when you're an opponent.
Chris, we talked to Predators general manager David Poile yesterday and asked him about Connor Ingram and his NHL debut and what he saw out of him. And, you know, one of the things that came out of that was, you know, it's well documented, the issues that he had last year, didn't really play a whole lot as he was taking care of himself. And, you know, that kind of led to when Pekka retired, signing David Rittich to be the backup. But David was very impressed in his first outing, and the future looks bright of him potentially being the backup to UC Soros on this team whenever that day comes. But what were your thoughts on Connor Ingram's debut and what you saw?
Well, you know, first of all, I think you wouldn't, you know, you cover sports. You know, often you get so ingrained in just the games, and these guys are athletes and they're robots and it's entertainment and all these types of things. I think the human side of this, it's such a great story, and he's been so open about it. And, you know, obviously mental health is such a huge issue. I think everybody deals with it, at, you know, in some level. And the fact that, you know, he took it upon himself to ask for help. You know, we've been through this with the Predators, Jordan Tutu, Austin Watson, and now Connor Ingram, and there have been others too. And the fact that they stand with their players and let them get the help they need to come out on the other side a lot better person, first and foremost. Obviously, that's going to, you know, lead to better things in their playing career. And the fact, you know, who knows? Like, life is, it's crazy. But he comes back. He's here in the summer, worked with Ben Vanderklok all summer. And they probably got, you know, Riddick as a stopgap to fill this year and see what Connor does. But he's been a guy that they acquired from Tampa Bay for this reason. He was going to be the next guy for UC Saros. He's a super talented guy. Willie and I saw him on the way out, and I was congratulating him, and just, you know, it's such a great moment. He's such a humble guy. His interview with Lindsay was just awesome, and I think he's got a bright future. I mean, he's got all the components, and, you know, the most important thing for a goaltender is what you have between the ears, and he's got a great head on his shoulders. And when he gets in those stressful situations, first NHL game, man, he was just so solid and calm, cool. You know, he has all the elements, and he's a big guy, and he's just so skilled. So I think the future looks bright for him.
All offseason, we've talked about what is the season going to be like for Matt Duchene? What is it going to be like for Ryan Johansson? And what we have seen in the early going is exactly what we needed to see out of those two. Duchene scores again last night. Joey's been all over the ice. He's been putting the puck in the back of the net. You can tell that they are playing with confidence, and we've seen him play together. We've seen with Forsberg. We've seen John Hines mix things up. But right now, all appears to be well with those two guys especially. What have you seen?
Well, you know, the whole offseason, you talk about all your young players, and, you know, Tanner Janot came onto the scene, and, you know, Luke Cunningham had a great finish, and Nick Cousins, and, you know, you go up and down the lineup, Colton Sissons, Yakov Trenin, whoever you want to talk about. But at the end of the day, you can't expect these young players to go out there and score 20, 30 goals. I hope they do. I think Tanner Janot and Yakov Trenin will do that one day. But at the end of the day, if this team, the way they play, they're going to be defense first and, you know, try to grind out those 3-2, 2-1 wins. You need your top guys to score. You know, Yossi's going to do it every year. You need Forsberg, you need Duchene, you need Johansson, you need productivity. You need to have a power play that's going to contribute, you know, if they can be a top 15 or a top 10, even better. And they've done that so far. They've, especially the last couple of games here, they produced, and I think their special teams have been great. And those guys get in on the special teams on the penalty kill, but more importantly on the power play, and they've been producing. Johansson, we've always known the talent that he possesses, and I think the thing with him is, can you keep him fully engaged for 82 games? Or, you know, it's hard for anybody, but can you keep him there for 65 games, 70 games? How much can we get him? Matt Duchene, can you get him rolling? You're given the opportunity to play with the top guys and play on the top unit on the power play, and what's he going to do with it? But these guys came in with the right attitude. They played a lot of preseason. You don't see that with a lot of veteran guys. They wanted to come back and get off to a good start. And I think now, you know, the first few games that we talked about, well, the Preds could have won or they could have lost. It was a close game, could have won either way. Now they're starting to win those games, and it's because of those guys.
Chris, last thing for you before you hit the fields. You kind of touched on this right at the beginning, but I think it's an important thing to keep in mind. Chase has hit you on one big ingredient. Obviously, this team is not going to outgun teams, as we saw Saturday in Winnipeg. If you get into a run and gun, the Predators are probably going to come up short in terms of their ability to win those night after night. Last night was the type of game that I think they want to try to replicate. And even Sunday in Minnesota, where they're holding teams down. I was looking. If you take away the empty net goals they've given up at the end of three different games, all except for the Winnipeg game, more or less, they've given themselves a chance. So how are you seeing just the overall structure? Not the individual players, but just the way that John Hines wants to play, the 200-foot game, it looks like it's starting to take shape for me.
I agree. I really do. And that's, you know, we talk about every game, even the Winnipeg game. They went tit for tat, and they were, you know, they open it up and there's a little bit of pond hockey game. They had an opportunity to win that game. They could have won that game had they locked it out, you know, whatever the situation. Every game they played, they could have won. And what that tells me is that you've got buy-in from the players because they understand the way that they have to play in order to have success, and success is winning hockey games. So you have to get that from your offensive guys, first and foremost, your leaders, because if you have, you know, Forsberg and Duchesne and Johansson going off and Josi going off and, you know, just trying to score goals and, hey, we got to get our points tonight and, oh, we lost 5-4 or we won 5-4, that's not how this team is getting the playoffs. And the fact that they are playing the type of hockey defensively, because for the most part, other than that, other than a little bit in the Ranger game and the Winnipeg game, it's been pretty low scoring chances per side. And, you know, I think, you know, when you're playing teams like San Jose, maybe not the top teams like Colorado, you know, you're going to outchance them if you play that way. If you're disciplined in your system and you play that defense, you're going to get so much offensive opportunity on the transition and turnovers in the neutral zone and the defensive zone if you have those numbers back. And I think the guys are starting to understand that, especially now when they're getting opportunities on the power play because they're playing with the puck, you know, more than the opposition because of their defensive play. So it's the full buy-in. I've had coaches where they want a defensive mindset, no buy-in, terrible. I've had coaches like Barry Trotz where you have the defensive mindset and everybody buys in and you got a chance to win every game. And I feel like that's what this team is all about right now.
Mace, appreciate it. Good luck with all the shooting today. I will say this, you know, I texted you and Skillsy the other night. I was playing the NHL 22 video game. You had a very nice out, and you only let one in. Preds alumni got the win. Skillsy put Lindros in the hospital. So, Stu, picture I sent you was Stu, Skillsy, and Mace. So the broadcasters right there.
All right.
On the the Preds alumni, but that was a lot of fun.
That made my night. The Big E, he gone.
He gone. Mace, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Chris Mason, Predators analyst on Bally Sports, alongside Willie D joining us. Make sure you're listening always, but especially in the 1 o'clock hour. We're going to give you a keyword, and you will have to text that keyword when we give it to you, and you'll be entered to win a pair of tickets to the 2022 Navy Federal Credit Union NHL Stadium Series.
Stadium Series.
At Nissan Stadium. So be paying attention to that. I know we got a couple of calls that want to talk Preds. We'll do that when we come back here in Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, hanging out with you on this Wednesday. DMAC with the day off. He'll return tomorrow. Talking some Preds. We'll get to your calls in just a second. But, Willie, I know you have some numbers on just the overall defensive stats when it comes to them.
Remember when John Hines came in, he replaced Peter Laviolette, and Peter Laviolette's whole mantra in a simple thing was play going forward, right? They played aggressively. The team was shaped that way. Skill, aggressiveness, go for it offensively. And if you did get into a high-scoring game, so be it. They had the weapons to win. And if they gave up more chances, you have great goaltending, Pekka-Rinne, backed up by Juuse Saros. And obviously, while Peter Laviolette was the coach, they won a lot of games. They had unprecedented success. But we know the story. It got a little stale. It had probably run its course. Peter Laviolette's doing really well now in Washington. But they made the change. And John Hines, they wanted to play a little differently. Little less skill, little more will, less finesse, more edge, more toughness, not as much firepower. So try to win more with the Barry Trotz style of game, the 200-foot game from the goal out. Well, how has it worked so far in this transition to try to get younger while they're putting this in? I think the identity is there. The Winnipeg game is the one exception. They played seven games. They gave up six goals in that game. Very sloppy, too many turnovers. Got outgunned by Winnipeg. Lost 6-4. the other games, if you take away the empty net goals, where you know obviously that's not the same as when you just give up a regular goal. They gave up 3 against Seattle in the first game, 2 against Carolina, 1 against LA, 2 against the Rangers, 2 against Minnesota, 1 against San Jose. That's the kind of defensive night after night type of structure you're looking for. You give your goalie a chance to win the game for you. You don't give up a bunch of grade A chances. Last night I was looking at SportLogic. They gave up 1 grade A chance, and that was the goal that San Jose scored. They gave up, according to SportLogic, now I don't know what goes into all this, 1 grade B, which was the breakaway early in the game. Tomas Hertl, who's not the guy you want to allow getting a breakaway. Saros makes a big save. All the other chances, and there were 11 of them, were grade C chances. The Predators bank on every night that a guy like UC Saros is going to most nights stop a lot of the C chances. And so the net result, hopefully, is you give up 1 or 2 goals a night. If you have good penalty killing, which that's a big improvement so far compared to last year. So we'll see. This, as our theme is, a huge amount of this season yet to be played out. But I think the framework of the defensive structure is there. The big question will be, can they get enough goals to win most nights? Here they are at 3-4. That's not going to get them where they want to go. But I think if they continue to give up 1 or 2 goals each night, or the type of chances that lead to that, give your goalie a chance to be the star, then I think they're going to give themselves a chance to, win between 42, 45 games, which is around what you need to win. You got to win over half your games to have a chance to make the playoffs. You win about 45 games most years. When you throw in the overtime losses, you're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's the framework of what you're looking for right now as you try to turn over the roster, get younger, create salary cap space so that you can go back up and build a championship type of team.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Scott from Franklin wants to weigh in on the defensive pairing. Scott, welcome in.
Well, building on what Willie just said, and I'm hoping he can be as frank as possible with what I'm about to say, but I haven't seen every minute of every game. I've seen most of the game so far, but from what I've seen, Matt Benning needs to be playing every night. And then the other three, as far as the third pair, Benning isn't doing anything to get us beat. That's, he at least gets the puck cleared out of the zone when he gets a chance. The other three, when is David Ferentz going to be ready? How far along is he?
I think you're bringing up a really good point. I think right now what's starting to take shape. It's a good question, Scott. He's been obviously watching very close. The third defense pair is the one that, if you're seeing, they're trying different things there. They haven't really settled.
And it's basically been a rotation: Borowiecki, Phil Myers, and Ben Harper is kind of swapping those guys out. Benning's been I agree. I think Benning's been solid.
So this happened around the second game of the year. They move Dante Fabbro up to play with Roman Josi. They move Alex Carrier, who had been playing with Josi throughout most of the preseason, to play with Mattias Ekholm. That has worked pretty well. Those top two pairs look pretty set at this point.
Yeah.
The Fabbro move has been outstanding. Fabbro has really risen to the occasion because I think, number one, whoever Roman Josi is playing with is going to – your job is made a lot easier, even though you're going to play the tough minutes. You're going to go up against other teams' really good players. So the top four looks solid right now. Here's what's happened. Phil Myers, for whatever reason, he had a good first game playing with Ekholm, struggled some in the second game. I think he's lost a little confidence. He's lost his way some, really struggled in Winnipeg. So it's kind of back to the drawing board with him. I think they see a talented player, but it's like, okay, how do we get this right? How do we maybe take a step back to take a couple steps forward with him? I think Benning has always been a guy that is very, very steady. He is who he is. He knows what he can do out there. He knows what he can't do out there. Mark Borowiecki is a guy, as we know, his story he had sort of a lost season last year. Had the concussion, had the well-documented mental health issues, the right. anxiety, the things he sought some help for. I don't think his game is all the way back yet. I'm hoping it'll keep getting better. And then you have Ben Harper, who also I think has struggled some, even though he sort of won the opening night job with a good training camp. Now, the caller mentioned David Ferentz. Ferentz, I think, long-term is going to be a really good defenseman.
I don't think he's next.
I think he's right.
Jeremy Davies is next.
I always remember something that John Hines told you in the Smashville Live.
Yep.
What did he say about Jeremy Davies?
He's an NHL defenseman playing in the AHL because of numbers is essentially what it is.
So right now they have eight defensemen on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
To bring up Jeremy Davies, they would have to make a roster move. You're not going to carry nine defensemen. I don't know a team that does that. But I think Ben Harper would have to be a guy that clears waivers. Obviously, Mark Borowiecki would. Obviously, Matt Benning would. Phil Myers, I think, would.
Yeah, I think he would.
So that's tricky. But I think that is what to look for, is if nobody jumps up and grabs those jobs, the five and six defensemen, then I think, you know, Davies is the guy they want in there. I think he's the next guy. And I think down the road, Ferentz will be the guy. But in the meantime, they need solid play. You're only talking about 10 or 12 minutes. You need some penalty killing from those guys.
Yep.
And then 5-on-5, it could be 8 to 10 minutes a night. But you need better play from those two.
I think Davies played well enough in the preseason to make this roster. It was just simply he didn't have to clear waivers,
right.
So they sent him down. My guess is if things don't get cleaned up soon, I would imagine Harper's probably the odd man out, because I think he would clear waivers. Myers being a younger player, and he's been around a couple of years. He traded for him. I don't feel as comfortable trying to do that, because I still think there could be an upside there.
Yeah, you don't want to give up on him.
Yeah, new system.
So early. Yeah.
But I could see them making that swap soon and giving Davies a chance, you know, on that third pair. Because the caller was right. You know, I mean, I think they need more production out of that third pair. Now, the third defensive pair is not supposed to create a ton of offense.
It doesn't have to be spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to create be defense, but you're just not getting a lot out of them. I have always, since Matt Benning has been here, I think he's solid. I think he should be in there every night. I know they've scratched him a couple of times. They're trying to find the right combination, you know, between these four guys that we're talking about, Borowiecki, Benning, Myers and Harper, trying to find that consistent third pair. But, you know, I just kind of feel like that, you know, Benning is working and then the other three aren't. Maybe figure out a way to give Davies a chance, because I think he's next. I agree with you on David Ferentz. Think he's going to be good moving forward, but not there yet.
Yeah, I think he can still benefit from every night big minutes AHL. Let's one more question.
Yeah, let's go to Bicycle Boy, who has called in on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bicycle Boy, go ahead.
Good morning, fellas. Last night we were watching the power play, the penalty kill, and which is much better. But there were several times when we had odd man breaks on the penalty kill. In fact, I think the second period we had a 3-on-1. Pretty sure that was during the penalty kill. But the question came up as we were discussing Arvidsson, how Arvi used to break out on the penalty kill and get up and got a lot of breakaways and often scored. So here's the trivia question for you. What Predator has scored the most shorthanded goals?
Off the top of my head, I would say Arvidsson.
That was our guess, but
I think it's Austin
Elijah
Watson.
May have looked it up.
I think it's Austin Watson. Like, you're saying historically?
All time?
Yeah.
Austin Watson.
Okay. But Elijah may have looked it up.
I didn't look it up.
So you don't even know the answer.
I gave you a guess. Yeah, I gave you my guess. My guess was Rocco Grimaldi, because he had a couple. He had several last year.
Shorthanded goals?
I think so, yeah. Last year.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the answer. I'm calling you guys.
My guess would be, I'll stay with Arvidsson. Grimaldi has not killed penalties very often in there, so I don't think he's been out there enough to get the most all time. You might have one or two in there, but Arvidsson, I think, led the league one year, or at least tied for the league in shorthanded goals for a season a few years ago? But that's a good question. Looking. I'm also fuzzy if you go way, way back, if there's another guy in there from the previous era, you know, the Greg Johnson or somebody like that from those teams.
Steve Sullivan. I would say Scott Nichol could be on that too. I mean, he was
– might have had a few.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, that's a good question. We will find out the answer to that. But that's – to me, that's an interesting thing. It really helps, I think, to have a guy who does strike that fear in the power play. You're like, oh, boy, don't take too many chances because we could give up a goal here. That definitely is something. Carolina comes to mind. They've got that mentality. You're like, wow, we can't take too many chances. We got to be careful or else they're going to be the ones pushing us. And that would have been a bummer. Or that would have brought the house down last night because Tanner Jeannot and Yakov Trenin, guys who are now getting in there on that penalty kill, I think they've been doing a really good job. They did have a great chance. Trenin hit the post on one. That was a 3-on-1. I think that was shorthanded.
Is there a Prince player this year that's hit more posts than Yakov
Trenin? Oh, man, he's had the worst luck. I can't believe he hasn't scored a goal yet. I think he has played really, really well, as has Jeannot. The herd line, I think, is continuing to improve and get better. So are you looking it up, Chase?
I'm trying to find it.
Because we could just text our
people. Okay, here we go. I do have it. It is Victor Arvidsson. 2016-17, he had 5.
So that's the most in a season. Does he hold the record for most career in franchise history?
That's just in a season that I was able to find right away.
But the first priority
Greg
is to
Johnson
kill.
Greg Johnson is next.
Okay. The first priority is to kill the penalty. You know, if you get shorthanded goals, in my mind, that's next level. But remember, this is a team that's finished 29th in the penalty kill the last 2 years, last year and the year before. So you're looking to just get more solid in that area. The penalty kill was a big part of last night's win, for sure.
And Minnesota, too.
Minnesota as well.
Minnesota had 5 power plays in that game.
Yeah.
And it was 3 last night, so they've killed the last 8.
That's where they did a good job is they did not let Minnesota get that power play goal that could have gotten the crowd back into it in the third period and made things a lot more interesting.
Yeah, there you go. So Arvi Hussle, getting that done. I thought Watson is tied for second with Greg Johnson.
All time?
4, yeah. Well, Greg Johnson I haven't found the all time, but in a season, Johnson did it twice with 4, 03, 04, 05, 06. Sullivan had 4 in 05, 06. Watson had 4 in 17, 18.
Okay, we'll continue to research this.
Yeah,
We'll find the career. So before we wrap it up, Chase, any other things that you want to throw out there predator-wise before we kind of swing back to the Titans in the next hour?
The other one was Luke Kunin. You know, Luke Kunin is somebody that he was a little slow to the start last year, and then we saw what happened with him later on in the season. It really came on, but he's had a slow start this year. You know, David Poile, when he's on with us, we've heard John Hines talk about this, always uses the phrase secondary scoring. I feel like Luke Kunin really falls into that category, and they're going to need him to contribute from a goal scoring, you know, perspective. He's got to put the puck in the back of the net, and just haven't quite been able to get him going yet from that point of view.
I think that's an eye test, and it's supported with, if you take a look at any type of analytics, Luke Kunin has not found his groove yet. We saw what he looks like when he does find his groove. He can be a heck of a player. He's still a very young player. But I think if there's two guys that I think are sort of untapped, and this is, again, in the question, can they get enough offense? I looked at the line last night to start the game. They put Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, they put them with Granlund. They had played together before and had success. You heard Matt Duchene say in the postgame show, that's the line I started with. His first year with the Predators, go way back, right, the 1920 season, and that group looked good last night. That group was very, very solid. They put Ryan Johansson with Elli Tolvanen and Luke Kunin. they didn't look so good to the point where they flip-flopped and they switched Ryan Johansson, put Johansson with the youngsters. I shouldn't say that. They put Nick Cousins, not a youngster. They put Cousins and Tomasino with Johansson, and that line looked better. They had better success. Tomasino had the breakaway that almost put the game away. But all that to say, Luke Kunin and Ellie Tolvanen, they show flashes. They have the talent. Ultimately, they need goals from those two guys. It hasn't happened. Tolvanen scored on his first shot of the year, hasn't scored since. Kunin, I don't think, has a goal yet. But also, Tolvanen's got his shot off more. Kunin, here and there, he's just not on yet. But I think that's, in a way, it's a good thing because you're like, there's another level there that we haven't seen. If they can get that level, that's going to mean good things.
All-time shorthanded goals is Greg Johnson with 11.
Ah, Johnny, the late Greg Johnson.
Yep.
How many does Arvidsson have?
10. And tied with Leggy.
Oh, there it is. I just found it. You found it a half a second before I did. Boom. All right, now you have the answer.
There you go. There you go. We'll come back with much more in hour number four. But first, Willie, you need to tell us about Lee Company.
Well, I will tell you about Lee Company. They are apparently sponsoring Chris Mason's team at the Mike Fisher Clay Shoot today. And kudos to them. They are defending champions. I forgot about that. But Mace let that be known on the airwaves. So we'll see if they can get a title today. But more importantly for you, the listener, Lee Company has a lot of services that they provide. One is one that we used at our house, or have been for the last several years, and that's the home maintenance plan, the annual checkups that keep your house running smoothly and efficiently, in particular, your heating, your cooling, your electric, and your plumbing. We get the calls from Lee Company. They send the service people out there. They check on these things before little problems become big problems, as I like to say. The big problem is, you will let it go, you don't have it checked, anything, and then it goes kaput in the middle of January when it's 10 degrees. That's what you don't want. So that's why the home maintenance plan is so important. They'll check it. They'll make sure everything's running properly before the weather gets cold. That's the idea. Check into the home maintenance plan for Lee Company. It works really well for us. It will for you as well. 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000 or LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor. Nashville Predators.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.